This is Focus West Michigan for Monday, August 31, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. State officials are working to address an oil leak at Millennium Park in Walker. WGVU's Dee Morrison has more.
The Kent County Parks Department became aware of an oil release from a historic, previously plugged well in a body of water inside Millennium Park Friday. Crews from the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy responded, placing a containment boom around the well to prevent further oil spread into the water while they determine next steps. The 1,400-acre Millennium Park occupies land that includes former gypsum mines, gravel pits, and petroleum wells tied to the Walker oil field, which began drilling in the 1930s. The oil leak is in a lake located east of Maynard Avenue Southwest, which does not have access points and does not connect to the public beach area. Parks Director Ben Swayze stated, "Out of an abundance of caution, we are asking people to avoid the affected area and refrain from entering or recreating in the lake at this time." The Kent County Parks Department is providing updates as information becomes available. I'm Dee Morrison.
At a time when West Michigan communities are debating data center development, Ottawa County's Georgetown Township is taking steps to control land use. WGVU's David Limbaugh tells us why it's purchasing roughly 34 acres of farmland.
The Georgetown Township Board approved the purchase of two parcels of farmland for $1.4 million. According to Township Superintendent Justin Statt, the purchase has been in the making for almost a year.
This all started when the largest vacant landowner in Georgetown Township passed away last fall.
That landowner was Wayne Haverdink, and his family had no plans to farm the land. The purchased parcels include 8.9 acres in the 8,000 block of 40th Avenue and 24.5 acres in the 4,000 block of Bauer Road.
This land is adjacent to high transmission and a substation. Typically, those areas have data centers, batteries, and solar plants. So we took that out of the conversation.
While Stat says the township purchasing the two parcels prevents the land from being developed into those types of projects, they are planning for the future.
If you look at the parcels around the area that we bought, it's primarily owned by developers now. So in the future, I don't know when, it will maybe someday not look like farmland. It may look like residential neighborhoods.
Stat says this is one of the last sections of the township that has not been developed. So purchasing the land allows them to preserve it as agricultural for now and sell it to developers 20 or 30 years from now if necessary. I'm David Limbaugh.
In an effort to increase access to nature, the Blandford Nature Center is opening its doors for free admission. And as WGVU's Jennifer Moss reports, this will be going on for the entire month of September.
Blandford Nature Center says it's celebrating fall by offering free admission starting Tuesday, September 1st, running through the end of the month. The reason behind free admission? Blandford officials say it's an effort to increase public access to nature. The Mary Jane Dockery Visitor Center will be open Monday through Saturday from 9 until 5, except for Labor Day, and the trails and grounds will be open daily from dawn until dusk. Guests will have access to 264 acres of forest, meadows, and wetlands, 8 miles of trails, and that includes 1 mile of ADA accessible trails, 2 outdoor playscapes, and the Blandford Farm, including the farm animals and children's garden. A generous donation from Meyer is the reason Blandford Nature Center can offer free admission. Eric Petrovskis, Director of Environmental Compliance and Sustainability at Meyer, says, quote, "We believe everyone should have access to meaningful experiences that help them connect with their community and the outdoors," end quote. More information about the trails, the grounds, and more can be found at blandfordnaturecenter.org. I'm Jennifer Moss.
After performing this weekend at the Ionia Freak Fair, WGVU's Phil Dawson reports Grammy Award-winning bluegrass artist Billy Strings is thanking the thousands of fans who came to the shows at the Ionia Fairgrounds.
This is incredible for me.
Grammy Award-winning bluegrass musician Billy Strings grew up in Muir, about 8 miles from the Ionia County Fairgrounds, and he told fans at the Ionia Freak Fair he's wanted to come back and perform in his hometown for a while.
I've been wanting to do this for quite a few years, and I think we finally pulled it off.
The two-day fair featured Billy Strings and a handful of other artists, including Green Sky Bluegrass.
Thanks for having us at your party, buddy. It's a pretty cool thing you did here.
It's a little bit of a gamble next to that Grand River, but we got blessed with beautiful weather.
Over the 2 days, more than 50,000 fans packed the fairgrounds to hear the music, and while they were in town, creating what was called a Billy Bump for nearby Ionia businesses.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for coming out. To all my friends from back home, it's good to see you. And to all you folks who are just coming to our beautiful town for the first time, welcome.
Strings is a 3-time Grammy Award winner in Grand Rapids. He sold out 2 shows at the Van Andel Arena last year. The Ionia Freak Fest is closer to home.
Thank you for being here with us in my hometown. This is unbelievable.
I'm Phil Dawson.
The Michigan Society of Anesthesiologists warns that studies show anesthesia used on older adults during surgery can significantly impact their cognitive health. WGVU's Dee Morrison has more.
The Centers for Disease Control reports nearly 40% of surgeries are performed on adults age 65 and older. Dr. Michael Lewis with the Michigan Society of Anesthesiologists says aging reduces the body's ability to manage surgical stress, leaving brain health particularly vulnerable.
If one has a pre-existing cognitive problem, it tends to get worse with surgery. And it can range anything from very mild confusion immediately after the surgery because of the drugs to full-blown what we call delirium.
Lewis warns those cognitive side effects can happen even in patients who show no symptoms prior to surgery.
What patients don't realize is that anesthesia can affect cognitive function even when the patient appears very intact cognitively in the preoperative period. Often, these changes can only be detected by complex neuropsychological tests, but they're there.
Lewis encourages older patients to discuss existing health conditions, cognitive concerns, and medications with their surgical team so the anesthesia plan can be adjusted. I'm Dee Morrison.
A Hudsonville bakery employing people with disabilities for the past 10 years is closing its doors. WGVU's David Limbaugh has more on the closure of Stir It Up Bakery.
In a social media post, Stir It Up announced it would cease operations at the end of the year. Stir It Up was founded in 2016 to employ people with disabilities. Initially operating out of a home kitchen, it eventually moved to its current Chicago Drive location in Hudsonville, offering cookies, muffins, cake pops, and cinnamon rolls from its walk-up window. That window will close at the end of August, when the bakery will focus on wholesale and custom orders over the next few months, giving employees time to seek other opportunities. The closure is a result of the landlord's decision not to renew Stir It Up's lease, according to the bakery's post. Quote, over the last 9 months, we have explored countless options and searched extensively for a new space. Unfortunately, with the current cost of construction and commercial kitchen buildouts, combined with the high cost of commercial rent, we have not been able to find a new location that makes financial sense for Stir It Up, end quote. The bakery thanked the community for its support and encouragement over the past 10 years. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, WGVU's Shelley Irwin looks at the services offered by the City of Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management, but first, news from around the state. A new state report is evaluating how clean Michigan's voter rolls are. Colin Jackson has more.
The Michigan Office of the Auditor General looked at different factors like how many dead voters or non-U.S. citizens were registered. In both cases, the number was exceptionally low compared to the 8 million total registered voters in Michigan. However, a small fraction of a percent of those registered voters still appear to be dead or non-citizens at first glance. Deputy Secretary of State Agogo Edebie says even those numbers can be misleading because of a lag in data catching up when people become citizens.
When we look at those individual categories, that is a demonstration that we are finding people who are not eligible and keeping track of them through our systems and protocols.
The state has canceled nearly 1 million registrations over the past 4 years. I'm Colin Jackson.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer is once again weighing in on the fate of an oil pipeline that crosses underwater through the Straits of Mackinac. Enbridge Energy has been seeking state and federal approval to encase a portion of its Line 5 pipeline in a tunnel to protect against an oil spill. Whitmer has ordered a complete shutdown of the pipeline, citing the potential danger and damage if a leak was to occur. There are several lawsuits in both state and federal court over control of the future of Line 5. One from Enbridge against the state filed in 2020 targets a revoked easement. In a response filed by Whitmer this week, she maintains the state has the authority to decide what goes on in the straits.
Michiganers deserve a say in what runs through our waters. These lakes power our economy. They provide fresh drinking water.
Enbridge temporarily shut down Line 5 this week after a traffic collision caused a leak on the pipeline in northern Wisconsin. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. The City of Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management Team works to help the community prepare for, respond to, and stay informed during emergencies of all kinds. WGVU Shelley Irwin talked to Benjamin Rantz about the office and more.
My next guest is here to talk about the City of Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management, a very important team. Have you signed up for your Grand Rapids emergency alerts? Well, never too early to start talking about the seasonal change and, of course, well, the rule of emergencies. Only get the best administrator with this Office of Emergency Management. You're in the house, Benjamin Rantz. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You must always have to be on your toes.
That is true. I guess that's my job, is to always be thinking of what could be happening in the City of Grand Rapids.
Yes. Take apart, again, titles, City of Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management. So a whole office dedicated to, well, an emergency.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our role is to really work with our staff and our different city departments to make sure we know what to do in an emergency. We're preparing for those. And then also we have like an external focus, right? We're working with our residents, our visitors, our different campuses and within the city to really make sure residents know what to do in the event of a situation, and then also how they can be prepared and how they can respond.
What would be considered an emergency?
Honestly, you know, an emergency is anything that has a significant disruption to normal life. You know, a lot of times I think people think of natural disasters, right? Living in West Michigan, we're all familiar with significant snowstorms. We're familiar with high wind events, you know, severe storms. But really, we can have any sort of emergency. So we had the tanker accident on US 131 back in April. That was considered an emergency, right? A major disruption to some critical infrastructure and some highways that we have in the area. Obviously, there are other things that could be emergencies, like active assailants, things like that. Really, it's anything that disrupts our daily lives and our critical services that we provide to our residents and our visitors.
Are you responsible for the bells the first Friday of each month, or tornado alerts or whatever? There,
yeah. We work with our dispatch team, our emergency communications team, and so they actually run those. But we work really closely with them. So if there was an incident where we would need to activate them outside of a regular testing or outside of a severe weather or tornado warning, we would be working hand in hand with them to make sure that they get activated.
Let's get into what a Grand Rapids emergency alert is and how we opt in for these.
Yeah, so really we have a free program to sign up for, and our role is to make sure that residents and visitors have the information and know what's happening within the city. So we have an emergency alerts program. It's very easy to sign up for. You can just text Grand Rapids, all one word, to 888-777, and you'll get a prompt walking you through how to create a profile. And really, it's a way for us to be able to push out emergency alerts, whether that's weather related, whether it's, you know, traffic, critical infrastructure related, just anything that's happening within the city that might, like I mentioned, cause a disruption to your normal schedule.
Is anyone applicable to sign up?
Absolutely. And the benefit of signing up is, let's say you are a resident here in Grand Rapids, you can sign up to get emergency alerts for the Grand Rapids area. But let's say you have family living in another area, you can actually sign up for alerts in that area as well. So really the idea is that you are just being aware of what is happening, not only where you live and where you frequent, but also any other place where you might have loved ones.
How are you helping those who may not have access to a smartphone for these?
Yeah, so another thing we're doing is we're encouraging people to check out our website. There are different ways to stay in touch there. We also do a number of social media posts, and we're always getting out in the community. You know, we're always doing emergency preparedness events. We do trainings for National Night Out. About a month ago, we were out at a couple different places. So really just getting out in the community, meeting people where they are, and providing information on what we would say are the three basic things to do. That's to make a plan, a family emergency plan, build an emergency preparedness kit, and then be informed. And so we really try to push that as those are basic small steps that people can take every day to just be a little bit more prepared.
Yes. What pamphlets did you bring in? Let's do some show and tell.
Yeah, I do have some pamphlets. So the first one we talk about is Make a Plan, right? We have these really neat, just kind of credit card size small plans. I actually recommend these not only for your home, but also for your students, right? If you have these, you can put important phone numbers, important meeting places. You can put these anywhere, K through 12 or even in college age. You can put these in your backpack. And that way, even if you're away from home, you know who to contact and where to go. We also have family planning guides. I actually brought one that's in Spanish today because we have materials in English and in Spanish. Basically the same thing, talking about what to do in an emergency and just walking through the idea of, you know, having a plan is one thing, but communicating that and sharing it with your family and friends is another, right? And we want to make sure everybody's aware of it. We also have a list of important stuff to have in your basic disaster supplies kit, or basically like an emergency preparedness kit. We pass these out. These are, you know, just absolutely free information so people can start little by little building their kits. And then we talked about being aware. We have little cards that we hand out with a QR code that they can scan to sign up for our emergency alerts. And on the back, we just have some important phone numbers. We basically hand these out with a magnet so you can add to your refrigerator collection.
Again, emergencies unfortunately happen, so preparation is key as well. Give me a few on that disaster list that I should be prepared for.
Yeah, absolutely. So a basic rule of thumb is we say, you know, we want you to prepare for about 3 days, right? If you had to be self-sufficient for 3 days, what would that take, right? We typically recommend 3 different disaster preparedness kits. We want one in your home, one in your car, and one at your workplace, right? A disaster isn't necessarily going to strike when you're at home and ready for it and waiting, right? So one of the main things is water. We typically say 1 gallon per person per day. So that would obviously vary depending on how many people you have in your home. Food, things like non-perishable, easy-to-prepare items, a lot of things like flashlights, batteries. The biggest thing that we would also mention is maybe like a weather radio or a battery-powered or hand-crank radio. A lot of times those weather emergency alerts are going to get broadcast, and then we'll also be able to, if the TV stations are down or maybe we don't have power, we can still listen to those radios to get those important alerts that are coming through stations like yours.
I think we even had those as a donor. If you pledged a certain amount, you get one, and that should just be a part of our programming. Again, emergencies do happen, so we get the best to talk about it, especially these Grand Rapids emergency alerts from the Office of Emergency Management, speaking with the best, Benjamin Rance. So again, let's just say there's a tornado warning. Would I get an alert on that?
Absolutely. So if you're registered for our alerts, you know, we partner really closely with the National Weather Service. Anytime there are warnings that go above a certain threshold, those are automatically rebroadcast, and everybody who signed up for our emergency alerts will receive those. You can also, once you sign up and create a profile, you can pick and choose what alerts you'd like to receive. And then this is one thing I also mentioned. You know, depending on personal preference, you can actually set quiet hours where you wouldn't necessarily receive those alerts as well. I know a lot of people, if you don't necessarily want to receive them during the night, you can.
That's when I want to receive
them. Exactly. So it's personal preference, right? I leave mine on 24/7 just so I always know what's happening and I'm always aware of those alerts. Another thing we like to do is, you know, we want people to understand that, you know, even if you're not from Grand Rapids, maybe you're just here on campus as a student at Grand Valley, but you might live elsewhere. We want to encourage people to sign up because it's difficult being in an unfamiliar place. You know, I've lived in Michigan. I'm from the West Michigan area. I've been here all my life. And even now and again, there will be weather patterns that surprise me and that can catch us off guard. So even the truest Michigander can benefit from signing up from these alerts and just knowing a little bit more about what's happening.
Yes. So, well, just do it. And that includes myself. Again, what's my action item to have this free opt-in notification system, please?
Yeah, absolutely. You can text Grand Rapids to 888-777, or you can visit the Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management website. We have a bunch of information on there, and not only how to sign up for alerts, but also how to make a plan and also build your preparedness kit.
Does your My Family emergency plan include what to do with my animals?
Yes, it does. And that's one of the things as well, you know, in our family preparedness guides that we also have, you know, it's important to, and you bring up a good point. That's why we create these plans, to think about things like that, right? If you are going to identify a hotel or a shelter, maybe out of the area that you're going to stay, have you already checked and verified that they allow pets and that they allow animals? You know, it's just important to think of all the moving pieces, not only some of the pets that we have in our house, but what are our important documents that we need to bring? Who are the people that we're going to contact? And does everybody know where we're going, right? I always give this example. You know, there was one time we had a storm a number of years ago, and, you know, we lost power. So I'm getting ready to leave, go to my mom's house to check on her, and she's getting ready to leave to come to my house to check on me. And so it's like, well, we don't want to pass each other on the highway going to each other's houses. So just having that plan and knowing where we're all going to meet up at our unification site is going to be really important.
Think we'll have a snowstorm this season?
You know what? Given that it's West Michigan, I think we're going to have a handful of snowstorms this weekend. I hate to say it.
But until then, we enjoy this cloudy chance of showers and storms, high near 85 day. How's that? One more time, best way to find out more information, Benjamin?
Absolutely. You can visit the Grand Rapids Office of Emergency Management website, and you can text Grand Rapids to 888-777 to sign up.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Monday, August 31, 2026. I'm Joe Bolecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.